This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Lifting the Lid with Sam and Duncan.
Luke Barnes is a postdoctoral researcher in astronomy and cosmology with a PhD from the University of Cambridge. He has published papers in the field of galaxy formation and on the fine-tuning of the universe. Luke has a brand new book out called The Cosmic Revolutionary's Handbook. This unique framed tour of modern cosmology gives us a deeper understanding of the inner workings of the universe. And today, he joins us for Lifting the Lid because he's a scientist of the universe.
Whoa, that sounds, Luke, like a really big job.
Very big.
It is. So my name tag's enormous just to fit all of that in.
That's incredible. Well, Luke, let's get right down to it. Brass tacks, mate. It's very unusual to meet a person who specializes in star signs and makeup and is a scientist. Please explain.
Yeah, well, cosmetology, it was a passion of mine for...
Was it when you walk through Meijer and they sprayed all the stuff on you? And
I'm like, no, I've got this. I know what's going on here.
Hang on, we got this wrong, haven't we?
Right. Well, you do get people, if I say, you know, I'm an astronomer and they say, oh, I'm a Capricorn, that does happen.
You go, I know where that star constellation is in the galaxy.
Well, I've got two options. I can sort of say, no, I'm, and try to explain. Or I can just sort of lean into it and start to just give them their fortune.
Sure.
Just make it up like everyone else doing astrology is. So those are two options.
No, but tell us what you're actually...
What I actually do is study the universe. So in particular, my sort of two fields which overlap, as was said before, is, you know, how do galaxies form? When we look out to see the way the stuff is arranged, it's the stuff of the universe isn't just thrown at random everywhere. There's stars, and those stars aren't just randomly scattered around. They're collected into galaxies, you know, swirling collections of, you know, a trillion-ish, mm-hmm. you know, give or take a couple stars. So why that? Why that arrangement rather than something else? And the other thing is looking at the fine-tuning of the universe for life, which is there are some features of our universe which allow life forms, any sort of imaginable sort of life to exist, which wouldn't be there if you change some of the fundamental rules a bit. And so this is called the fine-tuning of the universe for life, and it's a major puzzle in physics today.
As Christians, we believe God made the universe. As a scientist, is it possible to say that if you don't understand everything about the universe? How does that all fit together?
So for me, it fits together like this. You know, there's a really simple analogy you could have of sort of a video game character within a video game. So, you know, I'm a bit of a nerd myself. I like the Zelda franchise, if you're familiar with that.
Oh, mate, you're in a safe space.
Excellent. So there's an entire sort of video game world and characters in there. Mm-hmm. But if one of those characters sort of looked around and went, you know, I reckon this isn't the whole of reality. I reckon this is just a smaller part of some bigger reality, and that there's a game designer, then... you know, they would be correct and they would be sort of justified. And, you know, that's a reasonable conclusion to make. So when I say I think God made the universe, you know, science tells me what the universe is like. That's God made the universe is like saying, you know, there's a game designer. And science, it would be like me running around Hyrule inside the game and working out how the video game mechanics works and, you know, trying to defeat evil and all that sort of stuff.
Jump on mushrooms.
These are some of the best explanations I've ever heard.
I'm really locked in right now.
I can go down to Pac-Man level.
No, keep it going.
Excellent. And so that's how I sort of fit those two together. Not that they never interact, but you know... The opinion I have of the way what science is doing is the opinion that the makers of the scientific revolution have, you know, Newton and Boyle and all those people, you know, they think that if they go and study nature, they will find a rationality there that they can understand. And the reason they think that is because they think God created it. And so those two ideas are not against each other. They're pointing in the same direction. If you think there's a rational mind behind the universe, you'll think there's a good reason to go and look at it for the reasonable order that is underneath it.
I feel like then for Christians... it's fair for us to say when we don't know something, Jesus did it, right? That's just, it's the ultimate get out of jail free card, right? Jesus did it.
Well, I mean, the fact that I believe that true, I still want to know how God did it. You know, if you're doing an English exam, never write the answer because the author said so, right? That's true, but it will not get you any marks. So, again, as before, you know, there is this rational understanding, you know, there's a rational way the universe is laid out. It's a puzzle that we can explore. And so, you know, we don't just say, you know, of a crossword puzzle, there is an answer because someone wrote this. We want to know what the actual answers are.
Yeah.
We are lifting the lid with Luke Barnes about what it takes to be a scientist.
Luke, I've got a question for you. As a scientist, obviously, you got your head around how the galaxy's made, but then there's movies that come out on stuff. And I wonder, in the film Armageddon, the asteroid that the entire planet hinges upon is described as being the size of Texas. A team has 18 days to save the world, but an astronomer would tell you that if there had been an asteroid the size of Texas, it would have been potentially visible for years before it arrived. When you see sci-fi films like this, do you pick out all the inaccuracies or do you just let your mind wander?
I try to let my mind wander. And in particular, I've learned not to point out the inaccuracies to my wife, who does not, is not bothered. So the film Gravity, you know, on Twitter, various astrophysicists, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson, were pointing out various problems with that one. So at one point in the film, a character goes from the Hubble Space Telescope to the International Space Station, and he pointed out actually those are at very different altitudes, so that would never happen.
Right, okay.
And I didn't know that while I was watching it, but I don't really care. I didn't want the film to sort of end halfway through with the character just dying in empty space. You know, if the plot's got to keep going, I'm fine with that. What I want from a space movie is for it to feel like space.
Hmm.
Right, which Gravity does beautifully, and Armageddon does a bit. I just want to have some sort of, you know, I know the facts about space to some extent, but I want to know what it feels like. I want to sort of be inside it the way a movie does. You know, it can get you inside the story. And so you learn to ignore the few little things that you notice. Some of them are really bad.
What about the McConaughey one where he ends up in the
Interstellar?
Because that's got some theoretical stuff in there.
Yeah, well, it was sort of co-written by a very, very famous astrophysicist, very famous scientist, Kip Thorne, who's an absolute legend.
Oh, he's a rock star. Yeah, he sounds with a name like Kip Thorne.
Kip Thorne.
Yeah.
Is he related to Rip Torn? No?
I don't think he is.
Kip Thorne.
Kip Thorne. So he, you know, won the Nobel Prize for various things recently, for gravitational waves, I should say, specifically. And so they've got, when you've got someone who's sort of pushing in the direction of the science way,
yeah,
then it's not too bad. You don't just have Hollywood people just sort of guessing, like, oh, you could just jump from the Hubble Space Telescope to the International Space Station. Just jump in the right direction and off you go. The mistakes that really annoy me are the ones which make space feel more like Earth.
Right.
So the classic one is, you know, there's an explosion and you can hear it.
Yeah.
Obviously, in space, you won't hear an explosion because there's no sound between there and us. But you will hear the explosion hit the side of your, you know, if you're in a spacecraft.
Hmm.
But I want it to sound like that. So there's actually a good point in one of the Star Wars prequels, I forget which one, where there's an explosion over there and then you don't hear anything until you see the shockwave hit where you are. And that feels more like space. That's what I want.
It's good.
Hmm.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cool stuff out there for a scientist to explore in our universe. I think of things like black holes and dark matter and all this kind of... It sounds almost science fiction, but it's real. Do you have a favourite thing to look at in wonder in the universe?
My favourite thing most recently is there's a new telescope fired up in Western Australia called the Square Kilometre Array Pathfinder, the Australian Square Kilometre Array Pathfinder, which is a radio telescope.
Mm.
And one of the great things when you fire up a new telescope is it sees stuff and you don't know what it is. That's always the most interesting. Like, there's the things you know and you get a better look at, like a more high-resolution picture, if you put it that way.
Yeah.
But there's also the stuff where you're like, what's that? And so that's the exciting stuff. And so some of the things we're looking at the moment is not just black holes, but as stuff falls onto the black hole. It's obviously going to be falling very fast because it's, you know, it's a black hole. It's got a very strong pull. We think magnetic fields of in the stuff that's falling in get twisted up around the black hole as the stuff swirls around. And then some of the stuff falling in gets shot out from the disk in sort of off the North Pole and the South Pole.
Right.
So these are called jets, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And we see them on very small scales inside galaxies, but what we can see with the radio telescope with a nice big view is that they extend way out past the galaxies. And so we found, when we worked out what this thing was, we found sort of enormous, you know, 10, 100 times larger than galaxies themselves, jets, just stuff being blasted out by a black hole in opposite directions.
And are these traveling at the speed of light or far?
Yes. Because the reason we know that is because they say, think about, you know, water coming out of a hose.
Yeah.
The faster it's going, the more straight, the more, you know, the technical term is collimated, the more it comes out in a straight column. So if you want to blast something in a nice straight line, in enormous, you know, 100 times bigger than a galaxy distances, it better be going really fast. Right. And so for other reasons, we think it's going fast as well. So that's my current favourite thing.
That's incredible. So I wonder on stuff like this, is that, you know, it starts to get very theoretical. Like I even think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but something like dark matter, no one's touched it. You know, it's a theory that it's out there. So, like, you know, no one's seen it, no one's touched it, and we haven't ever met a person that has been around it, but we all believe it's there. Like, I feel like for a lot of what you do as a scientist, faith becomes really important. Right? I can't see it, I can't feel it, I can't touch it, but I kind of know it's there.
Well, one of the reasons we wrote this new book is... if you start, a lot of books want to go with the zany cosmology stuff and then just jump straight into curved space and expanding space and, like you said, you know, black holes and
space dark is expanding.
Matter. Yeah, it is. It's going to help with parking.
No, don't panic.
The Spider-Verse, right? Is that in there as well? There's a multiverse,
maybe,
right?
Who knows?
Okay, right.
You know, what we want to do is say, you know, look, these are weird ideas, but there are reasons why we believe them.
Yeah.
And in particular, we get emails from people. I wonder if this is true of you guys. You get emails from people who want to tell you how to do your job.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah?
Yes.
We actually get texts from them regularly.
Our boss tells us what to do as well. It's very unusual.
Everyone has an opinion.
Regular punters who've never been in front of a microphone just telling you how
to... It's our favourite conversation to have.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So we get that as well. I have a friend who's an archaeologist. He gets it, right? And there's people telling him about how
they... Of course, we've seen Indiana Jones. We know how to do
that
job.
Yeah, aliens built this, that, and the other.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, so we get these emails. Part of the reason why we wrote the book was just because we kept sending the same email back again, which is, okay, all right, look, to have a useful scientific theory, scientific idea, like dark matter is at the moment a useful scientific idea, it's got to tick off a couple of boxes.
Yeah.
For starters... You know, when we look at the universe, we measure things about the universe. So we have a bunch of numbers. So if you've got an idea about the universe, at some point, I'd better be able to crank some handle and out come a bunch of numbers.
Mm. Yeah.
And that seems obvious, but the number of people who send us, who include a sentence like, I know my idea is right, I just can't do the maths, is astounding. It's because it's like saying... I know I'd be good at dentistry, I just don't like teeth. Or, you know, I know I could write a symphony, I just need some help with the notes.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't, if at no point has your idea ever sort of churned out some numbers so we can actually check whether you're getting things right,
yeah,
you don't really have an idea.
Mm.
And so all these wacky ideas like, you know, seemingly wacky ideas like, you know, expanding space, dark matter... what we wanted to explain was, okay, there's a chain of evidence that leads us here. It doesn't lead us there, you know, in an ironclad, watertight way. We might have taken a wrong turn. We might, the evidence might be pointing us in the wrong direction. But there is a chain of, we aren't just making this stuff up as the short story. So in the book, we sort of lay out the sort of six main pieces. If you want to buy your ticket into I've got an idea about the universe, if you want to join that, you know, you've got to buy your ticket by explaining the most basic stuff. And then you can start theorizing about dark matter and dark energy and all the rest.
Right.
People might look at the job of a scientist and think, the coolest thing about a scientist is that you can get bragging rights on something you've discovered. Maybe even have something named after you.
Yeah.
Is there any part of that that drives you as a scientist?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah?
You know, like, more the idea of you'll be the first person to know something.
Yes. Okay.
And there'll be that moment where it's you and no one else knows this.
Mm.
Like, that's a major, from the top to the bottom, like, you ask an undergrad, you ask a senior, you know, scientist. That's a major thing. And so one of the things that the people who email us, that one of the classic signs of a amateur slash crank slash is that they've named something after them, their own thing after themselves already.
Yes.
Mm. It's something that needs to be, if I ever write, you know, a super duper equation, I'll give it some long complicated name in the hope that my colleagues we'll call it the Barnes equation just to shorten it off, right? That's
Oh, so you want your colleagues to give it the nickname.
Yeah, I can't call it the Barnes equation, right? That's just no.
You can't do it.
That's not like, you know, if you have to name
so you've
got to
be like, it's the quintillion quantum flux,
yeah,
parallel something or
capacitor,
other.
Capacitor, something. Yeah, just make it annoyingly long.
And they're like, oh, this is too long. It's the Barnes equation.
Yeah, bingo. That's the great hope. So if you get an email from someone who's laying out their theory and, you know, I've discovered, you know, it's from, you know, Bob Smith and I've discovered the Smith equation, that's instantly a sort of, oh, cross.
Yeah,
no, bad,
delete
bad,
that email.
Bad sign.
Fair enough.
Look,
when's your book out? Soon?
It's out today.
Fantastic.
That's exciting. Why do you reckon people should pick it up?
So we got a very nice review from a colleague of ours, a cosmologist at Cambridge University. And what he said was, oh, finally, my family keep asking me what I do for a living and I'm going to go and buy them all this book. And that was really nice. So there's sort of three reasons we wrote it, which people can take it in one of three ways. One of them is if they've actually got some super duper theory of the universe and they're wondering why no one's listening to them, we'll give you sort of a game plan to how you can make that work. And there are a lot of people like that out there. The second one is it really does lay out the way science actually works. It's a human activity, but we're trying to get above our human limitations. And so that's always like an interesting, you know, back and forth there. So it sort of takes the cover off of why scientists publish and why publishing is so important and why we do peer review and why we go and speak at conferences and why if you send us a 400-page, you know, double-spaced Comic Sans tech, you know, manuscript, we're not necessarily going to read it straight away. And the third thing is it will just lay out a great... It's just a tour of the universe, really from the bottom up, trying to start from scratch. You know, there are these slightly crazy sounding things that that cosmologists say about expanding space and dark energy and nuclear ovens and cosmic microwave backgrounds and all that sort of stuff. We try and start from the whole point of the book is to start from scratch as much as possible, to start with the most basic observations of the universe. You know, we have a detector which can measure radio waves. We stuck it in space. We pointed it in a bunch of directions. And there was light there that looks like it comes from something at a very low temperature, about 2 degrees, 2 and a bit degrees above absolute zero. That, like, starting from the most basic, you know, here's what we've seen about the universe, and then piecing together how scientists get to the Big Bang, but how other scientists got somewhere else, and how you, the cosmic revolutionary who has picked up this handbook, might, you know, revolutionize science as we know it.
I like this.
Yeah.
So for a Year 9 kid who's struggling with science right now and struggling to figure it all out, what would be your words of encouragement to them?
I feel like this Year 9 kid is you. Is that what's going
no,
on?
No, I kind of like...
You're in a Year 9 kid?
I like chemistry. I wasn't good at physics or biology.
I know the opposite.
Okay.
Chemistry was always... Anyway, for the Year 9 kid...
Yeah.
I think it helps if you start off with the, you know, these crazy, wacky ideas that we, like, you know, Einstein's theory about how gravity works involves space and time themselves twisting and turning and stretching. And
yeah.
I mean, I'm a professional astrophysicist, and that's still a really, really hard idea. So if we can strip it back to what do we see in the universe around us and build things up from there... It produced a sort of tour of the universe that you know is hopefully easy for people to follow the steps through, and maybe you come out saying, you know, this, I understand why they think that, but actually I think this, and you know, all that's fine, but as long as you understand why we got to where we are as in science, why the Big Bang is the most popular idea but not the only idea around, you know, that's the tour we want to take you on.
Love it.
Well, Luke, you have a brand new book out, The Cosmic Revolutionaries Handbook. I'm looking forward to reading this, and I hope many of our listeners are too. And thank you for lifting the lid on what it takes to be a scientist.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.